From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever the never ending, and ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hi, Bob. How's it going? Hopefully another restful weekend in the life of Bob from Bob After Dark. But, you know, you're looking a little bare right now because you don't have to...
I feel like I am in a remote studio somewhere shooting this at ransom. I feel like you're holding me like hostage.
Zoom in closer on you.
Feel like you're holding me hostage to make this broadcast.
I think they're repairing the screen behind you, Bob. But
oh, that's fine.
The fact that there was... usually at least some headroom for you because you could see the screen, but that's not the case this week. I could zoom in on you a little bit there, so it's good to see you, Bob, of course, here on Bob After Dark. I suppose you want to know about my weekend, don't you, Bob?
You know what? The fans would not be thrilled if they did not have the hashtag, what do we call it? The weekend update. But before we do that, we have to introduce somebody.
Sure.
So, folks, you've met him maybe a long time ago, pre, you know, Bob After Dark like podcast days. You might have heard his voice when he calls in every week. Joining us this week for our hashtag Fearsgiving episode, we have a very special guest, dear friend of mine, colleague in the paranormal world, colleague in the Ghostbusters world, and car expert, James from Peoria. Oh, hey there, James.
Here, everybody.
Here, let's try that again.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, hey there, everybody.
James, what's that sign say?
Welcome to this week's episode of James After Dusk. This is the paranormal radio show where we talk to you about all things spooky and car-y, and I'm your host with the most, who also enjoys James.
Look at that, Bob. It's like looking in the mirror.
It's like flat. What do they say about flattery? It's the easiest form of endearment. What is it?
It's the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, welcome aboard, yeah. James. Happy to have you.
No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. James, a little bit about you in a second. Let's get to the Panics weekend update.
Look at that, Bob. He's got the props up there and everything.
I know, and I'm over here in my, like, bare nothing studio. I feel like Max Headroom's about to pop on my show any minute now when interrupted.
I mean, look at his set there, Bob. He's got the candle out, the sign. It's amazing. But yes, Bob, you asked about my weekend. Pretty uneventful. Nothing too much happened this weekend. Of course, as we move into the winter solstice here, where the veil is at its thinnest, as always, as we're moving closer to that. But we can't think about that just yet, Bob. We got Thanksgiving, or what are we calling it tonight? Fearsgiving.
The Fearsgiving. This is our third Fearsgiving episode.
Is it?
This is.
Three.
Our third Fearsgiving episode.
I guess that's right. I'm trying to do, I would say second, but I guess it is the third.
This is our third.
Wow. Hard to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. James, let's...
Yes, Bob.
I can't look at your screen without laughing. I'm going to avoid my monitor in front of me because that's absolutely ridiculous. Make sure you have somebody take a picture of you in that. That'd be a good thing to have for the...
Sure. I wanted a dress for success, and you're the most successful guy I know. So.
Me and Steve, I guess. So what's who are you and why are you on Bob After Dark exactly?
Well, as he said, that wonderful introduction, I'm James from Peoria. I guess I am an expert in the paranormal and in the automotive world as well. And I also am a witch. So if any of your listeners would like to try calling in and talk about witchcraft and stuff tonight, you know, phone lines are open. I'm always welcome to talk to fellow witches.
Well, that's great. We're happy to have you, James. And James is a paranormal investigator and a Ghostbuster, too, kind of how we met. And James, how long have you been doing the paranormal stuff? How long have you been doing the Ghostbuster stuff? And, you know, just tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, so far as in the paranormal stuff, I've been studying the paranormal my entire life. I grew up with stories of the haunted farmhouse my grandparents were in when my dad was a baby, and all kinds of other stories and stuff. And it's always really interested me. And I had my own paranormal team for a while there, for about from about 2002 to 2012, we were active and did investigations. And then, so far as in the Ghostbusters thing, I've been doing that since I started researching and getting into it back in 2005.
Well, geez, now look at you. Now you're just crabby and giving your best Bob After Dark cosplay.
Oh, thank you. I'm throwing the gauntlet down to you, Children of the Night, to send in your best Bob cosplays. Hashtag Bob play.
The hashtag Bob play. You know, Jacob Bartlett did that back in October. I think the gauntlet's already been thrown, but yours is pretty good.
I think you're right. I think that's probably what inspired me to take on such a wonderful persona.
Absolutely. If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, what we are is we're a show about legends, lore, and supernatural. We're on every week where we also talk about some weird, spooky news of the week and anything odd that might pop up in there. We also cover paranormal stories that are covered by you, the fans, and we're kicking off this week strong with some weird news of the week. My first story might actually be the breaking news of the week. And that is, a sign of the apocalypse, I might say. A metal monolith has been found by a helicopter crew in a Utah desert. A wildlife official spotted an unusual object while counting sheep during a flyover in a remote southeastern area of the U.S. state. They said the structure had been planted in the ground between Red Rock. There is no indication who installed the monolith, which is about 10 to 12 feet tall. And they're saying that when they landed, they took a look at it and they tried budging it, and it physically won't move. The story comes to us from from BBC, and they were saying that the wildlife that are hanging around it, the mountain goats and whatnot, are actually acting really suspicious and weird to this. If you guys ever seen 2001: A Space Odyssey, this is definitely not good news. And this is my, oh hey, this is a bad moment of 2020, or I guess this is par for the course. Hashtag Panic Stick and hashtag James Stick. Let's start with Panic.
Well, you know, I did classic movie, right? 2001: A Space Odyssey. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. That scene, it's like a 20-minute scene at the beginning there. Then they're actually in space. I haven't seen the movie in a while. So that appears at the beginning, right?
Yes. With the Ric Flair theme going. Yeah.
But then they cut the space and it takes place in space.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean,
giant space baby watching yourself die, playing chess with an AI. It's a weird Stanley Kubrick movie.
Of course, as all of his movies tend to be. But now, have they researched this thing? I assume it's a sculptor, right?
We don't know. People are saying it's a prank, but they're saying it's not budging. So that must have been one heck of a prank to get this monolith to physically go into this canyon and be planted.
Do we know what year it was put in there?
We don't know.
Nothing.
Oh. We know that it's heavy.
Well, then it must be one thing. It must be aliens.
Skeptics are saying it might be some sort of art project sundial.
Okay. Well, that sounds nice.
James, what's your take on it?
Speaking from a healthy skeptic side, there is that video on the internet of the guy who made the electromagnetic Thor's hammer. So other people couldn't pick it up except for him with a thumbprint. So there could be a lot more to it buried underground, and it could be a prank. But if it really is like a end of the world scenario, all I got to say is it's about time, you know.
You know, 2020, you've been throwing some punches all year, and now we're getting down to the very, very end and the nitty gritty of things. And
you got to figure, we've lived through how many apocalypses now, and none of them have come to fruition. You know, you're welcome, thanks to your local Ghostbusters. But get on with it already.
So we don't know. We'll keep you updated as the story breaks and the story progresses. James, you have a news story for us.
I do, actually. This one will be mostly for you, Bob, because I know the count mostly drinks tomato juice. But how do you feel about chocolate shakes?
Man, I do like me a good milkshake.
Yeah, how would you like to win north of $500,000 with your milkshake?
I would say that sounds pretty wild.
Yeah, a man named John Morrison from Powhatan, Virginia, if I'm pronouncing that right, went to a sheet store for a chocolate shake Tuesday evening. And while in the store, he decided to buy a ticket for that night's Cash 5 Easy Match drawing. Everybody's been talking about this new game, said John. You've got to be in it to win it. His ticket matched all five numbers drawn, and he became the first player of the game, which launched in October, to win the progressive jackpot that came out to $564,000.
Wow.
Talk about trusting your gut.
I would say that is a literal stroke of luck. And, you know, they say in the paranormal world there might not be such a thing as luck, and things are just, you know, more or less coincidence. But, man, I like to believe in some luck once in a while.
I think it might have been intuition.
Maybe so. Panic, what's your take?
Well, you know, I'm a guy that really has too much luck when it comes to these lotteries or scratch-off tickets. You know, to come to think about it, and it's good for them, of course, but I did come up $100 ahead at the casino one time. But I'm not a big gambler, guys. I like to set the penny slots.
Oh.
And I try to win with that. Quarters at the most. But once you get past the dollar, I stay away from the poker and blackjack and I don't know, maybe I should consider a lottery. People get lucky from that, so why can't maybe
you know,
it's my time.
We do talk about science on the show, right? And we talk about like odds sometimes.
Yeah.
And I remember reading once that the odds of winning the lottery, you have a better chance of getting struck by lightning 3 times.
Really?
Than winning the lottery.
Yeah, but the people that win the lottery never got struck by lightning.
Well, so. I'm just saying you have better odds of getting struck by lightning 3 times than you do actually winning the lottery.
Some people play all their lives and never win. And some people play once and then win it big.
James, is there a spell we could be working on to win the lottery?
That's top secret. Sorry.
Oh, good to know. fair enough. Okay.
I don't know, but if that's true about the lightning strikes, then people who have one, they better stay indoors during bad weather.
All right, let's move on to my second story. This is from The Insider. I posted this to the Children of the Night page last week, so if you guys aren't on the Children of the Night Bob After Dark fan page, make sure you guys gotta get on over to the Children of the Night Facebook group page. I post some of our articles before we talk about them there, and this one was brilliant. And it was George Clooney bet Brad Pitt and Don Cheadle $10,000 to spend the night in a haunted house on Lake Como, but they couldn't do it.
Well, now.
George Clooney once bet his Ocean 12's co-star Brad Pitt and Don Cheadle $10,000 to stay in a haunted house in Lake Como overnight, but they couldn't do it. Clooney recalled the story during a video with GQ in which he revisited his most iconic movie roles, including Ocean's movies, the second of which they shot parts of it in Lake Como, Italy. We were all staying the night at my house in Lake Como, and there was a house across the lake. It was empty. And there was an Italian book about it. We made up a story about how haunted it was, Clooney said. Clooney, who played the role Danny Ocean in the movie series, told GQ that his Italian friend Giovanni pretended to read a story about a man who used to kill people in the now abandoned house and throw them in the lake. Clooney and Giovanni managed to talk it to everybody into how dangerous this house was. The Oscar-nominated actor then went on to a late-night trip with three of his co-stars, Pitt, Cheadle, and Matt Damon, who all reprised their roles from Ocean's 11. At 3 in the morning, we got a ladder and we put it up on this pontoon boat, and Matt and Don and Brad and I took the boat across the water. then took the ladder up and climbed into the house. The first thing we saw was a statue of a snake eating a woman's head. Clooney continued, "We came down to the conclusion. We'd give 10 grand to any guy who could spend the night in the haunted house with just a candle and a bottle of wine. You get a candle, you get 6 matches, and you get a bottle of wine," was the challenge. It was Pitt and Sheetal who ended up taking the bet and staying in the supposedly haunted house, while Clooney and Damon went back to the boat and drove out in the middle of the lake to see how long their co-stars would last. "We were sitting in the boat in the middle of the lake, and we have to see the candle go by the window. It goes by 2 or 3 windows, and then we get a call, and they're all like, oh, you know, swear word that, get us out of this house. And we came back and pulled them out." Clooney, Pitt, Sheetal, and Damon all starred in all 3 Ocean's movies together while they continued to work in some capacity ever since. There was no real story about, like, what went on in that house. But apparently, this made-up story that they made up ended up being truth, and it scared Don Cheadle enough to want to get out of that house. Hashtag panic stake.
Well, you know, I think for any other people out there, $10,000, George Clooney offered you $10,000 to stay in a haunted house, you probably do it. $10,000?
Oh, that's not even a question.
No, but Brad Pitt and they don't need the $10,000. Why would they want to spend their night in a haunted house?
1, it's a haunted house. 2,
most people wouldn't want to do it, though.
Listen, you're getting paid 10 grand to stay in a haunted house.
You would love
it. I would do it for $10, and the wine doesn't even have to be good. You could give me a box of Franzia wine, and I'd be all about it.
I'm just saying, the average person that may not like being in a haunted house would take the bet because it's $10,000 in their pocket. They might muster up the courage to spend the night there. But if you're, some rich actor or, millionaire or whatever have you, $10,000, you're like, keep the money. I'd rather just stay in my own house where it's not haunted.
James, your take.
You could put me in a haunted house with Jeffrey Dahmer for $10,000, and I have to defend myself all night. Sure. My only problem is, logistically speaking, a candle won't last all night.
That's true.
I don't even need the candle, guys. Listen, I'll wander through the house in the dark. Again, you don't even have to give me cheap. You don't even have to give me expensive wine, because they weren't drinking cheap wine. I would be happy to stay in the haunted house. I have no problem with it. It's part of my job, right?
I sure. guess so. I'm speaking for the average person out there, Bob, that doesn't want to do it. You would take the offer.
I know I
no
would.
Doubt.
I'm curious if the house was actually haunted, or because it's not like the story was publicized when it happened. So it's not just something you could refer to it as, like a publicity stunt. I'm curious if they just got overtly scared and they, started freaking out at every little noise they heard, or did this abandoned house actually have some real scare to it?
Somebody did ask if I would stand for unlimited cheese curds. Now I might have to. That's a tough decision right there, guys. I might have to take that offer.
All right, James, you got another story for us?
I do, yeah, actually.
All right, let's hear it.
So, Sooner Paranormal paid a visit to the family-owned restaurant Dick's on 66 in Sepulpa? Now's your chance to make fun of me for pronouncing these.
I wouldn't know if it's right or not.
I'm sure you're right.
They placed cameras inside the restaurant overnight and caught the lights flickering on and off. Multiple orbs were captured on security cameras placed in the back room. And another video captured a weird strand floating in front of a camera in the dining room, followed by a growl. According to Sooner Paranormal, multiple conversations and voices were recorded. Some of these recordings included Ethel, I Can Leave, and I Told You Not to Whisper, as well as Duke Was Here and We're Dead. I watched the videos myself, and one of the things that really intrigued me was when the article says the lights were flickering on and off, they don't go into a lot of detail. But it's like you can see there's several light fixtures in the screen, and each of the fixtures has several different bulbs in them, so like almost like chandeliers and stuff like that. individual bulbs in fixtures were blinking on and off. And unless you really had the place wired to do that, it's kind of hard to explain.
Huh.
Yeah, and then the light strand they talk about, when it first comes onto the screen, it just kind of comes in from one side to the other, and it just kind of hangs there. It looks like a spider web, but then it kind of like shoots away from the camera and over one of the tables. I saved the link to that, and I'll post that in Children of the Night tonight.
Excellent.
So everybody can take a look and see what they think. But what's weird is I don't hear a growl in that video after the light strand.
You know, I like me a good paranormal investigation. Part of what we do here.
Me too. I never get anything that awesome.
No. I mean, I don't know. What's the Panic's take on this first?
Well, what were the EVPs again? What did they say?
Things like Ethel, I can leave. Duke was here, and we're dead.
Yeah, after the "we're dead" one, I think I'm going to wrap up the investigation right there.
Panic's done. Yeah. Panic's done the first word. Oh, Ethel, I'm done. Panic's gone.
Yeah. But once you get the "we're dead," that's when it's probably, that's when case closed. Time to get out of there.
Whereas me and James are like, that's just the start. Ethel, what you doing here?
What more do you need after that?
We're going to have to do an investigation with a count, and we're going to have a box of cheese curds and be like, Mom, would you do it for a panic snack?
A panic snack. Oh, my. Listen. If Count Panic becomes our Scooby-Doo and we start doing panic snacks,
there's places you just shouldn't be in. I'm just saying that.
For a vampire, you're not very courageous there, Count.
Because I seen it all already. I don't need to witness it all again. So, I mean, come on. You got the EVP that says we're dead. What more do you need?
I need to find out why they're dead.
Well.
That's part of the investigation. If I stop there, we're not getting through the rest of it.
Some things are better.
Why are you dead? How many of you are dead? Who's Ethel?
Ethel, yeah. Well.
Yeah, we kind of want to know who Ethel is. And who is this Duke? And why should we care that he was here?
Exactly. Panic. It's the investigation part.
But you know the ghost is old when they're named Ethel. I mean, there's nobody named Ethel nowadays.
You're going to be offending all of our fans named Ethel.
Who's named,
I feel like
find
you're going to
be one person named Ethel.
You're going to be apologizing.
We're going to get a 1-star review on Apple Podcast because from some gal named like Ethel 1942.
Or a guy. You could be named Ethel. It's 2020.
I feel like
you're going to be eating your foot, Count Panic. I feel like you're going to be issuing an apology
somebody,
next week.
Okay, if you're listening to this podcast right now, I want to know your name is legit Ethel. Let me know, and I apologize. I'll apologize next week. Until then.
Don't be leaving us a bad review, please, because we're going to be getting the good reviews here shortly.
Let me take a little bit of the heat off of Panic. Did you know that Ethel is short for a longer version of the name?
What is it?
No, what is that?
Ethanol.
Oh. Oh.
Are you just...
I think that's true.
Oh, right. You guys are awful. I'm telling you. You guys are...
related to the lore of the week.
Okay, well, that's good. We're gonna get to that. I think we have our first caller.
We do
on
not.
That.
I'm
okay.
Just moving over.
Oh, I thought you were taking a phone call
there.
Remember, folks, our phone lines are open.
What's the number?
If you're listening to the live show, 219-845-1100.
There you go.
I have one more news story. James, do you have one more or no?
No, those were the two that I was able to get this
time. I have one more news story, and then, Panic, you have some big news regarding Bob After Dark that I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, so we're going to get to that
in just a
minute. For next week, yes. All right, this next story actually comes to us from Toronto, and a sinkhole filled with glowing green liquid found in the middle of a Toronto street. And this story comes to us from the Blogtoe, which I believe is a... it's like a blog post website that talks a little bit about Toronto, and I'll be reading it word for word. Grab your buckets, folks. Toronto just got itself a good old-fashioned slime hole right in the middle of trendy Lylesville, sort of. There is, in fact, a sinkhole on Hastings Avenue between Queen and Dundas Streets East filled with a bright green liquid that looks exactly like the ooze that birthed everybody's favorite anthropomorphic crime-fighting squad of bros, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're asking, is this a publicity stunt for the TMNT franchise or some sort of chemical leak? Or in the reality of the situation was... it was a non-toxic dye to see if the mysterious sinkhole connects to any sewers.
But
they didn't. The city of Toronto didn't tell anybody that. So everybody was gathering around looking at this legitimately scary, you know, the scary substance coming out, as in like Ghostbusters 2, like mood slime coming up from the ground. I thought Toronto was going to be dealing with some guy coming out of a painting. But in reality, because they didn't say anything, it just turned out to be a fluid they were using to try to find out if that sinkhole that was growing, which is a big sinkhole, was connected to any sewer lines. Hashtag panic steak.
All right, well, that's good to know. You know, I thought it would be something alarming. I thought we would have to call it a Ninja Turtles to fight the crimes in the sewers there, but it sounds harmless, Bob. A harmless ooze never hurt anybody. So, case closed on this one, unlike the other stories.
This is a case closed. But for a while, before we knew what the case was, when the story first broke last week, nobody knew what was going on. James, what's your take on the story?
I think that's just what they want us to think, that it's harmless. I think
we got a conspiracy here.
Yeah. I mean, why else would they not tell anybody and somebody goes, hey, what's this glowing ooze that looks like ooze? And that's nothing. That's like dye. We're testing things. Like what? Sewer stuff.
You know, James, we're going to play a game this week where we're going to connect our news stories, right? So your guy that won the milkshake lottery, right? Wins the milkshake lottery, takes his money and invests it into a crime-fighting Ninja Turtle team to fight whatever's coming from that metal monolith they found in Utah.
Plot twist, he's secretly a furry, and he dresses as a rat.
Oh, boy.
Wait a second here. Speaking of ooze, Bob, do you see that on the desk? Not your desk, James's desk.
Do you just have random props popping up during the show?
Is that ooze?
What? It's back.
Oh, boy.
It's orange, though, so.
It is orange.
You jello.
All right.
It's kind of red from here.
Yeah. Oh, that's ooze.
Cop Panic, you ready to do a cheers?
Yeah, sure.
Because we have a 5-star review on the Apple Podcasts.
All right.
This one comes to us from Shira, 1981. The title of the review is Spooky and Entertaining. I came across Bob After Dark and the Count very recently. They are entertaining, fun, spooky, and informative. I consider myself somewhat of an expert in the paranormal field, but I learn something new every show. I feel like I'm a part of the show as I laugh at them. You guys are awesome. Thank you. To you, Shira. 1981. Here's to you. Thank you for the 5-star review. Cheers.
Yes. Shira, thanks to you. 1981, a very fine year. So, Shira, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Cheers to you.
Thank you. And, folks, do you have a weird, spooky, paranormal advances in science news story you want us to share? Reach out to us. You can reach us on our Facebook at facebook.com/BobAfterDark. You could slide into our DMs on Instagram at BobAfterDark, or you can email us, BobAfterDarkShow@gmail.com. Currently, the Bob@BobAfterDark.com email is down. I'm getting that fixed as we speak. So right now, the best contact for us is BobAfterDarkShow@gmail.com.
There you go.
Now, James, I'm going to put you on the spotlight before we move on.
Alrighty.
I want you to tell me...
Well, wait, before you do that, you want me to reveal the news?
No, we're going to build up tension for a moment. That's how you do storytelling. Can't we mention it?
Well, you mentioned it afterwards.
We build tension.
All right, just checking it out.
We're going to build tension, and then before the commercial break, we're going to announce the big news.
Sure.
And then we get back from the commercial break, and then we're going to dive right into the lore of the week.
All right.
So, James, usually this is the part of the show where we'd share some fan mail about some personal interactions with the paranormal. But being that we have you as a guest on the show, I was hoping you can share a weird story about something relating to our topic of the week, our lore of the week. So for you guys that know from either reading the, you know, watching the live show and you read the Facebook post saying what the show is going to be about this week, or you're listening to the podcast and you see the title, this week we're talking about haunted and cursed cars. Fun fact, James actually owns a self-proclaimed haunted car, and I was hoping that you'd share a little bit about this car on the ghost story portion of the show.
Why, certainly. I can definitely do that. The photograph you used for this week's topic post is actually a hearse that I purchased this summer. And it has, I believe it has no less than three spirits haunting it, because it definitely has three distinct personalities.
What are the three personalities?
I'm doing fine. Everything is great. Yep, this is good. I'll be just a little mischievous, a little playful. And the third one is I'm an emotional basket case and I'm having a complete meltdown.
So what makes you think that there is some paranormal activity going on with this car?
Well, when I took it for the test drive, everything's running good. It's running great. The air conditioning is ice cold. Hey, this is great. Cool. I'll take it, you know. And we take it down the street, stop at a gas station and fill it up, top it off, check all the fluids, because it was about an hour drive to get back to the house. And almost immediately after I hand the money over to the guy, the air conditioning stops working. Not a big issue. Okay, sure. Got it home and everything's okay for a while. And then all of a sudden, whenever I open the driver door, the factory alarm goes off randomly. Like I've hit the unlock button. I've turned the key in the door. It should be disarmed, but it's not. Did you know that Cadillacs have four horns under their hood?
Can't say I did.
They're very loud and they annoy the dogs, the neighbor's dog.
Well, go on.
One of the instances of I'm emotionally melting down, you actually witnessed when right before I picked you and Tiff up, everything was good, happy, fine, fun time, all the way up there, no problem. I picked you guys up and the window decided to break and the air suspension decided not to have any air in it anymore.
Now, James, this just sounds like you bought a used car. What makes you think this is paranormal?
It's the timing. Oh. Like, I had aired up it's a Cadillac for one, and they knew that the air suspension would fail, so they put a thing you could air it up like a tire. I aired up the suspension before I drove up north. Fine all the way, no problem. And then just suddenly, bam, problem. And like I said, the alarm, it still goes off randomly, even though I've found a bad ground, and that will play heck on your electronics and your wiring in your car, that I fixed it. But still, at randomly, the most random of times, you'll unlock it, open the door, and it starts honking. And it scares the bejesus out of me every time.
Huh.
Because it's not going to do it. Honk, honk, ah!
But when you bought this, James, here, did they tell you, hey, this may be haunted, or did they just sell it to you as is? Did you say, show me the Carfax? How did that work?
Well, he said he used it for a couple of years, like hauling band equipment. So I was like, oh, that should be pretty good, you know. Huh. He got it from a funeral home in LaSalle, Illinois. And I bought it from him in Kewaunee. And like I said, the test drive, it went absolutely beautiful.
Maybe that's the thing, though. When you buy a hearse, you should expect maybe something to linger on. Quite possibly. I mean, maybe that's a given. We don't know about.
You're going to be getting into some spoiler territory there, Panic, because I think James is one of James's topics tonight.
I'm thinking maybe, but my attitude is a lot of people are creeped out by hearses.
Yeah.
When they're behaving themselves, they actually are a really nice car to drive. You got all that cargo space in the back.
A lot of room.
A Cadillac pickup truck. And when they're doing their actual job, what they're carrying is already, you know, sealed in an enclosed box, basically, and more than likely has already moved on. But I think ambulances are creepy because people actually, unfortunately, pass on in the back of those.
That's true, too.
You know, I think one of our listeners right now that's watching live, he's an EMT, so maybe he could chime in and share a story about that. But No, that's
Love to hear it if he'd call in.
You know, we have yeah, nobody. Where's John?
It's only 9:37, Bob.
That's fine. I was being a. Remember, folks, our phone lines are open 219-845-1100.
Oh, you know what? He should call in if he's listening. We had a blue van. Maybe I'll let him tell the story if he's looking to talk about something. But this blue van is kind of mysterious.
You know, I pre-research, I was thinking about this whole haunted car thing, and I've heard stories about haunted everything in my years of studying the paranormal. And, you know, the car thing, I said, you know, when I first started, I was like, you know what? All these stories I hear and all these things about mechanical failure, it just sounds to me like every person who's ever bought a used car has bought a haunted car because every coincidence is the same. But it gets weirder. But we're going to hold off on that until the lore of the week moment. Now, come panic.
Yeah.
You have some news for us.
I do. For next week's Bob After Dark, I got
and
a big guest.
That's a commercial.
No, not a Now you're just playing, you know, that's not even good storytelling, James. That's mean storytelling.
Well,
we
never
built
heard
suspense.
Of a cliffhanger?
Yeah, well, that'd be, yeah, we did a cliffhanger by me screwing up at the beginning because I teased everybody in the post saying, we have big news for next week.
Well, there we go.
And then I forgot to mention it. Then I mentioned it. And I said, panic and mention it now. And then if we cut to commercial, then people are going to be waiting even longer for the news.
No, well, the news is this, guys.
This news is this.
Next week, a special guest, Kitsy Duncan. And you might know her from the Amazon Prime show, The Oddity Files. She also has a podcast with the same name, which is a very popular podcast. She wrote a new book, I'd Rather Talk to Dead People. And also, if you're listening here in Northwest Indiana, the region, she's a region native from Griffith High School. So next week, she'll be zooming in with us, and it should be a good time. I mean,
we're
very
super
excited
forward.
For that.
Yes, we're really looking forward to having her on the show. I know the Amazon show. I know her podcast. So we're thrilled to have her, and we're excited to talk about her book. And it just so happens that the hierarchy of things that work, she was just on Coast to Coast, which I'm really excited for her
recently,
to talk about.
Yeah.
And then she comes on Bob After Dark, because I always feel like I'm chasing my dream of someday hosting Coast to Coast.
Doing the book circuit here.
Doing the book circuit. Yep. Making towns count, panic.
Making towns. So it sounds like an interesting book, and I'm excited to find out what more is in it next week.
Yes. So stick around, folks. Go on, James.
And if you need a substitute, I'm here for you.
James, are you working on a book?
I could be.
Oh, okay. Confessions of a Self-Proclaimed Dragon, the James Bria story.
No, this is, I was a co-host Bob.
Woo-hoo-hoo. So, folks, that's really exciting news. We're super excited to have her. You know, that's a celebrity status guest, so we're very excited to have her on the show. And Cal got to talk to her a little bit today, and I was a little jealous that he got to do it before me, but I gotta give this one 1,000% to Cal Panic. He landed the interview. I did it.
Well, here's the thing, Bob. I would like to take a lot of credit saying I searched high and low for her, but she kind of came across my desk here, and I was like, perfect, this works out, because WJOB has a paranormal show.
Yes, we do, every week, hosted by yours truly's. That's plural.
I was like, you don't want to go on.
I was including James.
I was like, you don't want to go on these daytime talk shows that have.
And we slowly get shut off by the boss's daytime talk show.
You want to go on Bob After Dark.
All right, folks. Why don't we take actually, we have a caller. So we're going to take caller, then we're going to take a quick break. Just patch him straight on, count.
Oh, we got John on the line here.
John, hello, John. You're on the air.
Hey, hello, Bob, Tony, James. How you guys doing?
Doing good. What's on
hey,
your mind
John?
Tonight, John?
I just want to call and wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving to you and all your families.
Oh, well, you too.
Oh, well, that's nice of you. Thank you.
And I heard the count mentioning about that van, but James, are you familiar with, of course, you're familiar with James Dean, right?
Yes, I am, actually.
Are you familiar with the car that he,
spoiler alert, John, you always do this to us every week. John never fails to get a spoiler alert in the show because he talks about things before we talk about them.
Well, hey, maybe I'm psychic.
Maybe you are. Hang tight, John. We're going to talk about James, or James is going to be talking about James Dean here shortly.
Okay, because I have my better half that wants to inquire about it. She's got some things she would like to say. So I could call back.
Absolutely, we'd love to. James, can make sure we talk about the James Dean car first, okay?
But before,
absolutely.
Before we talk about the James Dean car,
we hear that you might have a haunted vehicle, John.
Yeah, well, I had a '98 Chrysler van that I, in 2011, 2012, I wanted to get rid of it because, you know, it was kind of acting up a little bit. But all of a sudden, one evening, the lights came on. So, you know, I went in and thought maybe I had the lights turned on, but they were off. So 5-10 minutes after that, they went off. And make a long story short, they kept coming on and off all night. So I disconnected the battery because I don't want the battery to drain, and it was still coming on.
Huh.
So I took it to some top alley mechanics, and they said maybe it's a brain. I forgot there's a word, but it's like considered the brain box of the vehicle. That there might be something in there that might be causing it, but if they were to fix that, then it might cause something in the heating, with the heater. So they really don't want to mess with it. So anyway, they tinkered with it, couldn't figure it out. I took it to a couple Chrysler dealers. They had no idea what it could be. So I had to leave it overnight at a couple places to see if overnight for a couple days to see if they could see anything, and nothing was coming, on or off. When I brought it back home, it started on and off again. So to this day, I don't know what was going on with it. So when I went to trade it in for, the vehicle guy now, obviously I told him the story, but, they still took it. But, that's the story of my haunted van. So.
Huh. Well, that's spooky stuff, John.
James, how do you explain that?
Well, it's a Chrysler product, so.
Yeah. Well, that you know what? Yeah, I guess you got a point on that. I mean, that was the first Chrysler and the last Chrysler product I got. But, yeah, so
I used to follow a website called Jalopnik, and they had a story a while back about Chrysler employees. When they would go on their lunch, they were doing illicit things that the company would normally frown on and then going back to continue working on cars. So maybe, I don't know.
Demons. That's my room. I'm going with demons, John.
Jalopnik.
Yeah, Jalopnik.
Is that a Polish guy?
Jeez. All right, guys.
James, you give your story about the James Dean. We'll call back. My wife's got some questions for you on that.
All righty, sounds good.
There we go.
All right, thank you. We'll talk to you in a little while.
To compliment John's part about the talking about the van, I only have one answer, and that's demons. But before we talk any more about cars and haunted cars, live audience, stick around just for a few moments. Into our podcast fans, you're about to hear some words from a podcast that you should be checking out. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
Oh. And we're back. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, Bob.
Panic, what'd you do during break?
I was looking out the window here, Bob, and I think I saw the old van driving down the street, but the spooky part was nobody was driving it.
James, what'd you do during break?
I went to the optometrist, and then I got a haircut.
Look at you go.
Huh. I was going to buy a haunted car, but I didn't want to own another car.
That's
I'll sell you one.
No, I'm good. I don't need the hearse.
You want the hearse, though.
I do want the hearse, yes. You're not wrong. Because Bob After Dark needs to be driving a hearse, for sure.
How much does hearse run these days, guys?
This is a conversation.
I saw one for $4,000 locally, and somebody snatched it up.
You want to know a fun fact about that hearse, by the way?
What?
Somebody was selling that hearse was back up on the market.
Really?
Somebody sent me, and I'm like, I know that hearse. It's back up on the market.
Maybe because it's haunted.
And James said, I brought it up to James, and he said the same thing. He's like, oh, it's probably haunted. Or he said, or they looked at it and saw it was a mechanical nightmare, and they said no.
Quite possibly. Either one will do the trick.
For sure.
All right, folks, let's dive into the lore of the week. This is the part of the show where we talk about a specific topic that is what our topic is for the show this week. And I have James on the show because we were talking when he first brought the hearse, because James knew a story about a serial killer that was, doing their work and then storing bodies in a hearse. And I got my brain thinking, and we've been talking about this for over a month now. We're like, well, what can we do? And I'm like, you know what? Maybe sometime in November, I'm curious if we could find some stories about some haunted cars. And fun fact, there are stories about haunted cars, and more so cursed cars. And that's where we're at today. I want to preface by saying this is my Fearsgiving episode, because one of my biggest fears in the universe is my car breaking down or something happening to me on the expressway. Or in my case, I've had some really nasty experiences in vehicle stuff in my life, getting hit by a train, getting
You've
stuck.
You've had some close calls.
Yes, being stuck stalled behind a vehicle on the Dan Ryan. You know, I knock on wood, I'm okay, and I'm grateful for it. But nothing makes me more uncomfortable than being around a vehicle or watching vehicle crashes or things like that. Because I've had some close calls, and I've had some really scary incidents in cars in my life. And I just wanted to put two and two together. So this week, for my Fearsgiving, we're going to be talking about haunted cars. And James.
Yes.
Why don't you kick off the conversation and tell us a little bit about James Dean's car, because I know John's going to call us right back with that.
Yeah, very good. It's got to be one of the most famous haunted/cursed car stories, because as I was researching it, it came up on a lot of websites.
Before you get on, James, we're going to do a quick trigger warning, folks, and a quick preface. There is a certain word that comes up in conversation. It was the name of the car, and we have this approved. It's not the worst word in the world, but we're also family friendly. So in case you wanted to keep your kids sensitive to words, one's going to come up here really shortly that James Dean named the car. Just FYI.
That's very good.
Yes.
It was a Porsche 550 Spyder. And Spyder is just, it's a two-door convertible, basically. A lot of cars, even today, are still called Spyders. James Dean himself called it Little Bastard. There you go. It's over.
There you go. It's done, guys.
One of the interesting parts of this story that I've heard about was famous Obi-Wan actor. No, not Ewan McGregor. Rode with James back in the day, and he said, if you keep driving this thing, you're going to be dead within a week. Well, James was a semi-professional car driver. He was an auto racer. He was a skilled driver, but still, one evening on his way to a race, he lost control of the car. His passenger was critically injured, and he did unfortunately lose his life. One of his friends by the name of George Barris, also very well known in the car community as well as the custom car community, took possession of the wrecked Spyder and began to sell some of the parts off of it to other people who had Porsches and were looking for parts. What's really interesting was at first, you know, there was no rumor of a curse or anything, or well, this was just chalking up to bad luck. Supposedly, he sold the engine and drivetrain to two doctors. They outfitted them into their own vehicles and entered a race in Pomona, California. While racing, both of the doctors crashed their cars, and one of them, unfortunately, lost his life. I believe a starter also went to another vehicle, and something unfortunate happened to the person who got a hold of that too. So now this has some bad press, and after a while, Barris did start to put some stock into the curse, and he donated the car to the California Highway Patrol. The police were happy to take it, and because it was a famous car, you know, it was a hot rod and all this, and they had plans to use it as a warning for reckless drivers. And the thought process was, well, even if there's a curse, if it's just on a trailer, you know, touring from town to town, it can't hurt anybody. The car seemed to be unhappy with this. The first incident took place. The car was stored in a garage that inexplicably and suddenly burnt down. And where it feeds into the curses, everything was completely destroyed, not a shred of it left, but the wrecked car remained completely untouched. So they chalked that up to bad luck. They continued to use the car, taking it to high schools, because of course high schoolers are usually the one who they're out racing their buddies, they're out driving crazy, and they're just kind of new to driving in general. En route to one school, the car broke loose completely from the truck hauling it and crashed into another vehicle, and this, unfortunately, was another fatal accident. Undeterred by these omens, the police took the car to yet another school, where it fell on a student off the trailer, breaking their hip. In total, the spider fell off the trailer that carried it 3 times, crushing a truck driver once. Not only did it give law enforcement trouble, but it also made it life difficult for criminals. A couple of thieves tried to steal the blood-stained seats and steering wheel from the wreck. Instead of getting some memorabilia out of it, all they got were injuries. What's interesting was the California Highway Patrol decided, you know, enough is enough, and they got George Barris to agree to take it back in 1960. En route, the Porsche mysteriously disappeared and has not been seen to this day. Except, while I was digging on this, I found the story on Volo Auto Museum's website. They're real famous cars. On their website, and they're the only one who has this bit of info, so I think it might be relatively new info and really interesting. In 2015, a Mr. Sean Riley, a 47-year-old man, provided a possible lead on Dean's old car. He claimed that his father, who was a carpenter at the time, had taken him to a job as a child where the client wanted a wrecked sports car to be hidden behind a wall. Father and son worked to hide the car, and as the two worked, the wrecked car gave Riley a scar on his thumb that he carries to this day. Riley also claims that one of the men who wanted to hide the car was George Barris himself. So the presence of Barris with the mysterious sports car kind of fueled speculation that Riley had helped to hide the James Dean car. According to this, the Volo Auto Museum had Riley take a lie detector test to verify his claims, and he passed. So this may be the first lead to the vehicle since 1960, although Volo has had a $1 million bounty out on that Porsche since 2005.
What a domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
What? James, in your metaphysical expertise, what would cause a car to be that cursed in a metaphysical explanation? Because in a skeptical standpoint, you would say, well, series of really unfortunate events, but that's a lot of unfortunate events, man, that just keeps, you know, trailing after the car. I saw in the chat someone put up that they were saying that, are we sure that these were the actual parts coming from the car that people were getting after the crash?
Right. Yeah, so like the engine and transmission from the car were used, I remember reading about this story years ago, and the starter was used on something. So anybody who has any connection to it, it seems to come and just bite them.
What do you think is causing the curse or the haunting or whatever?
Well, it could be a couple of different things. It could be somebody connected to Porsche could have decided, you know what, we want the Porsche name to be bad, and what better way than a series of events to happen? It could have been an employee at Porsche who had ties to the spirit realm or to the paranormal and cursed an individual car. It could have been something recycled, a cursed object, or even an object that somebody used to house a demon, say a metal Dybbuk box. The box was melted down, the steel was used for the car, and the spirit or demon remained in the steel.
Huh. Dybbuk box cars. Sounds dangerous.
Well, I definitely wouldn't house a demon in a car. I mean, for obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons. You know, people make fun of me because I travel with, like, haunted memorabilia in the car, and they're like, aren't you worried? Nah, I'm fine. It sits in the trunk.
I've had a lot of close calls on the interstate, but no, it's fine.
Jeez. I can't get over the fact that all of those things kept happening. And the fact that this Barrett guy wanted this car, if the story's true, that they hid it behind a wall, that this car was so bad that they wanted to hide it from public light. That's insane. I've never really heard the story before you shared it, and hearing it, everything clicks. So it's really interesting.
That would make sense, wanting to hide it away from the public. I have read about some cars that have been found buried, hidden inside of a house like that. The only thing I can't figure out that would kind of like break up the story a little is when it was put in a garage, that garage burnt down.
Maybe maybe the housing that it was put behind that wall was blessed. I don't know. We have a caller. Is it John calling back?
I believe my mom. We'll find out here soon.
Okay. Oh, hi there.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
Ah, hello. Hello, hello. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. So James Dean's car, it was never found. Is that it? It was.
Well, James, you take over.
Other than this one lead from 2015, where supposedly somebody bricked it up back when, if he's, you know, in his 40s, 50s, when he was a kid, the timeline does kind of match up. So if it's been hidden from the world, it disappeared in 1960 without a trace.
Oh, but, you know, like, you know, it's funny. When that day that James Dean was going to that race, he had a guy following him in a station wagon, and the station wagon had a trailer on it. And what it was is they were going to put that car on the trailer and go to Salinas where the race was going to be. So what happened was is the mechanic that rode with James Dean in that little car, he said, well, you know, why don't you break that car in and drive it? So they, you know, and I think what it was just, you know, a little car like that collided with that other driver who was driving a big 1950s Ford that was built like a tank. Because, you know, back in the day, those cars were big.
Oh, yeah, and, sure.
And that little car that James Dean had didn't have a chance because, you know, and that other driver didn't see James Dean because that car was silver gray. And he probably just blended in with the road, and that was it, you know. But that was really, you know, terrible. But yeah, I was just wondering what, you know, whatever happened in the end, you know, if that car was.
One thing I couldn't find was what happened to, so like the doctor's cars that crashed, I couldn't find what happened to the parts they had used. I couldn't find what happened to the starter that got used and hurt somebody else. I don't remember, because I've read about this before years ago, I don't remember if it actually, like, if they brought the parts back and put it in it, or if they got melted down. Does the curse continue with the melted down parts? I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Huh.
All right, Bob. Well, thank you very much.
No, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate you.
That was a really good, that's a really good theory that they collided and that caused the accident.
Yeah, so. Okay, well, have a good night then.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much. Happy Thanksgiving, you and John.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
She's a fan of James Dean, so she's...
No, we appreciate the call. I you got to get those things out there. I am very impressed because I never, you know, I've heard the James Dean car curse thing, but I didn't know how far it went. And that's just, it blows my mind. Idiosyncrasies can only get so far, folks. You can only blame bad luck so much. You know what I mean?
Well, Bob, you say you travel with this, maybe these haunted possessions in your car. You don't get nervous by that, or you think it's...
Nah, it's fine.
Okay.
All right. It's fine. All right. All right, so I'm going to cheat on my first story. So it's not a car per se, but a train.
Haunted train.
A haunted train. And I don't know when this will ever...
South Shore?
No, I don't know when this will ever come up in conversation. But if you guys are interested in hearing about the paranormal side of Abraham Lincoln, Ghostly Podcast did an amazing episode, and they just came out with one a couple weeks ago about Mary Todd Lincoln. All about the paranormal ties and ghostly sightings that they did. Go check out Ghostly Podcast episode on the Abraham Lincoln. But this is the only time I'm ever really going to get a chance to bring up a ghost train involving Lincoln. Train, car, I'm going to cheat. It's my show. It's fine. So,
well, they call train cars train cars.
Thank you, James. I appreciate the backup there. So...
Yeah.
Lincoln was our president of the United States, who unfortunately was assassinated in 1865. You guys know that story. It's a very popular story. And his wife, despite her well wishes, it was decided that post Lincoln's death, Lincoln's cadaver was going to go on tour. And I'm not talking like playing at a rock concert, guys. I'm talking like they put his corpse in a train. And they took this train across country, well, what they would consider cross country. And this train went all around the area, and it traveled in a zigzag pattern so it could stop in every major city in the area and, you know, be able to get seen in smaller communities along the way. During the time it would stop, people would go and mourn Lincoln's death and would go and see his body. Think of it as a wake on wheels. There is a bit of a morbid side to this. They had to use fresh flowers to mask the smell, and the train had to make frequent stops to collect these flowers. It was also said that the body was not embalmed, so a couple of funeral employees were enlisted to travel with the deceased president to keep his body looking good. So during his travel, by May 2nd, the body was poorly discolored and the crowds were getting upset at the sight. And then by May 3rd, President Lincoln made it to Springfield for the final time. Ever since, at the end of April, during the anniversary of the funeral train ride, people still claim to see a very bizarre sight, which is a ghost train trugging along on the tracks silently. And sometimes you would see a track that it would drive along the existing track. Sometimes the tracks themselves aren't there. Sometimes it's a spectral train on a spectral track. And some people are saying that this is just a really eerie sighting every year right around the time of Lincoln's death tour. Now, it's fascinating, right? Because I don't consider this an intelligent haunting. I believe this would be a residual haunting since it's happening around the same time every year, and it's just following the same-ish patterns that it went down during the first train ride during Lincoln's death ride. And I got to give a shout-out to Seeks Ghosts blogspot post on helping me get the information for this one. But Can you imagine, like, you know, you hear stories of like ghost cars, like actual, like, you know, spectral cars going on rides. You don't hear a lot about trains. And the fact that this is a train that they believe might be Lincoln's death train is beyond fascinating to me. What's your guys' take?
Well, it's interesting too. Wasn't there a story around here about the circus train as well?
Yeah, we talked about that in our Northwest Indiana Paranormal episode with Chuck and Pete when they were on.
You could still hear the horns sometimes.
Yep, and you could sometimes, unfortunately, hear, you know, the crash and
Yeah.
whatnot.
So I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a ghost train out there other than a circus train. It sounds like for sure this Abe Lincoln death train could be a thing there, Bob.
You know, apparently there's a Northwest Indiana connection to this. Pete chimed in and said that the Lincoln Death Train actually came to Michigan City, Indiana, right near the zoo, and there have been ghost sighting or ghostly train sightings right by the Michigan City
Really?
Zoo,
Wow.
and people still hear the whistle at night right around the time. So, James, would you agree with me that residual haunting on the Lincoln's death train?
Oh yeah, definitely. I've researched that one myself, and some say that the car that held Lincoln's casket, you can see the casket. It's illuminated by an eerie light. And sometimes the soldiers you see on it actually are skeletal men in blue uniforms.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It's not just, you know, and that's the other thing. It's not just people. There is, you know, it wasn't just Lincoln that was in this car. They had the people working there, and there was, you know, it was an honor guard. They had troops with the train going with the train, and there are sightings of full-blown apparitions of men in uniform there. So that's really interesting. And that's why I cheated on my first one, because there's probably never going to be a ghost trains episode of Bob After Dark. I don't know that many stories about ghost trains or spectral trains, so this is probably the only time I'll ever get to do it. Someday down the line, I'm probably going to eat my foot because then people are going to be writing in and telling me stories about ghost trains, and I'm going to be like, well, now I got to do an episode. But for the moment.
Well, I like trains too, so I'd love to be down on that
All
episode.
right, James, we'll put you on the wait list for the trains episode. What's your second story?
So, news from the world of ghost adventures.
Oh boy. Our old
Yes.
buddy Zach Baggins.
You're gonna love your buddy Zach Baggins is at it again.
Oh, what's he up to?
He has purchased Jack Kevorkian's van.
Oh my, I've seen the episode.
Yes,
Yes.
and I saw that. And I had to mention it.
Thank you. I
So,
appreciate you taking time out of your lore of the week to tell me. Did they find anything
yes.
in the van? I watched the episode briefly. Zach goes on in the house in background noise at times. I watched his Joe Exotic alligator thing, the lion rescue place. I watched that episode around Halloween, and I've seen a handful of Zach Baggins's work. I'm not gonna, you know, I've seen it. Did
I
they
don't
did
think
they
I've ever watched anything Zach Baggins. I'm so sorry. I'm just not a.
do you know if they caught anything on the Kevorky van?
No, but the thought was there were people who had assisted or mercy killings, assisted suicide actually happen in the van. So it's very possible it could be.
You know, I thought this was before, it was a few years back. It was on one of those pawn shows where you could pawn things off. Somebody actually took that van to one of these pawn shows and tried to pawn it off. I don't know whatever came from it from there, but it looks like now it's in different hands. So,
Now it's Zach's.
yeah, so.
I remember the episode vaguely, 'cause I remember, to Zach's credit, they put the van in like a soundproof like garage, and they were doing EVPs on it. I'm gonna have to rewatch that episode and see if they caught anything. Maybe somebody in the chat watched that episode of Ghost Adventures, and they could chime in and say it. He's got a large collection, I'll give him that, of a lot of cool stuff. Peaches told me that they bought the he just recently bought the clown from Poltergeist, so that's good.
Yeah.
I gotta watch the Kevorky van episode now and see what happened, because he was doing actually a lot of experiments on that. So if there is a haunted van, probably that one. I'll watch it and we'll fill you in next week.
What I did want to talk about, though, it's interesting that John talked about a Chrysler he had that had gremlins. One of the stories I found is actually a Dodge car that it has a verified body count of more than a dozen people. And what's really kind of ironic is it was a 1964 Dodge 330. And it became known as the most evil car in America. It was originally purchased as a police vehicle where three different police officers drove it. Each officer who drove the car ended up committing, allegedly, murder suicides, where they first murdered their families and then killed themselves. And the strange part comes in that there were strong similarities within the three cases that made people start to kind of wonder if there's something to it. Supposedly, according to this, while after its time as a police car, a family known as the Allen family drove it. They reported that when they drove it on the highway, the doors would mysteriously swing open, and several children have also died mysteriously around the car. Two who were hit by cars flew across the street and landed underneath the Dodge. Another child who was dared to touch the car ended up dying with his entire family 2 weeks later in a house fire. When members of local churches heard about the demonic vehicle, supposedly they vandalized it, and several of them ended up dying shortly after that. So Wendy Allen, she said when she drove it on the highway, not only would the doors open inexplicably without anyone touching them, the steering wheel would suddenly jam, placing all the passengers in harm's way. But the story goes that many of those who vandalized it ended up apparently like on a group excursion or something. And I won't give you the details, but they died very horribly when they were struck by an 18-wheeler. And supposedly one was struck by lightning. So in 2007, a child who supposedly touched the car went on to murder his entire family, much in the same way as the three police officers. According to this story, after the tragedy, local church members, they stole the car, chopped it up into small pieces, and scattered the pieces to multiple junkyards to ensure it was never reassembled. And so far, the car hasn't come back, and the curse has ended.
Huh.
So that's a case of that sounds kind of like Christine, where it's like the car's evil and it's also like projecting itself into people.
And when you talk about haunted car movies, that might be the only one. I was gonna say you put it at the top, but I feel like that's the only haunted car movie.
Well, one of the I found this one, it's called The Golden Eagle. I found it on a couple of different websites, and somebody claimed it may be the inspiration for Stephen King's book.
Really?
Christine.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I apologize to the caller. I don't think I got to the phone in time. 219-845-1100.
It's 10:15. It was probably Jack.
Might have been Jack. But
it was Jack.
They hung up.
Jack
by the
called
time
back.
Reached up to
I know it was you. It's 10:15.
Yeah, no, wait until we're done.
Yeah, no, Jack will call back. I'm sure he will.
Somebody was calling.
Okay, so real quick, I got an update. One of the fans, the Queen of the Night, just sent this in. Zach Baggins' van was on his show, Deadly Possessions. It was a show by Zach. And they had a four-part series, and one of the parts on that was the Gaborski van. Just got a quick update.
There you go.
That's an interesting story, James. Thanks for sharing that one. I don't like to hear when stories like that end in such a tragedy. But, you know, what you got to do at the end is try to break that cycle, break whatever it is. You know, sometimes you think of a curse, people think curses are real because they believe in them. And the only way to break that is to start breaking the belief or put a positive something notion on it. And maybe destroying that car was what they needed to do to break that curse up. I'm quoting.
Well, you could be putting the belief into, as I'm destroying this thing, I'm destroying the curse.
Absolutely.
I
guess this quick side off rail here. I guest starred on an episode of Ghostly Podcast a while back. You guys could check it out. I was on the episode about the Von Erich family curse. It was a pro wrestling family thing. And we had a long talk about curses, and Pat said it really good, and it's something that always stuck out to me, and he was talking about curses. And Pat said, you know, curses are real when you start believing in them and when you put faith into them. And that's always struck out to me since he said that. Maybe that in this case is what happened. People thought that car was what did it, and they put the energy into, we're going to destroy this car and we're going to release whatever negative curse it was.
Maybe. I'm going to be a little skeptical on you here, Pat. The Egyptologists who discovered King Tut did not believe in any sort of curse, but many of them did have unfortunate things happen to them very under odd circumstances. One of the Egyptologists actually perished as a result.
Well, we'll save that one for another time. Because my next story we're going to talk about is the shot and the assassination that caused World War II. This story comes to us from Best Ride, and this I'm referring to Franz Ferdinand.
Great band.
No, not the band. It wasn't World War II, it was World War I, but you get the idea. Yeah. At the turn of the century, Grafen Stift built some of the world's most exclusive luxury automobiles. Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria rode one when he was assassinated, an act that would set off the world's most violent war to that point. Legend has it that 13 people met similarly violent ends in that car, but the true story of its license plate will make your hair stand on end. Grafen Stift functioned as a transportation manufacturer until 2001, making trucks and buses, but in the early part of the 20th century, it was known for building some of the finest automobiles known to man. One of Grafen Stift's luxury limousine, a double Fontian carrying engine number 287, was purchased by Count Franz von Harrach, an officer of the Austrian Army Transport Corps. It was a count. Count, any relation?
I'll have to look back in the family history, but I don't believe so.
Okay. The limousine was used to shuttle Archduke Franz Ferdinand around the Austro-Hungary city of Sarajevo on June 28, 1914. Early in the day, Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were attacked by the Nedijuko Kabrafek, who threw a grenade at their moving car. The bomb detonated behind them, injuring occupants in the car behind. After arriving at the governor's residence, Franz Ferdinand angrily shouted, "So this is how you welcome your guests, with bombs?" After resting at the governor's residence, the royal couple insisted on visiting those who had been injured by the grenade. The drivers of the motorcade managed to get themselves in a situation that required turning around. This was a time of unreliable ignitions, crank starters, and low voltage. The cars backed into the side street and stalled. 19-year-old Gavro Princip, a member of the Young Bosnian and one of the group of assassins organized and armed by the Black Hand, was sitting at a cafe across the street. He recognized his opportunity, walked across the street, and shot the royal couple, badly injuring Sophie and killing Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Ferdinand's assassination was the breaking point in tension between European countries and eventually precipitated World War I, not II. I apologize. I correct myself there. A multinational confrontation that eventually claimed a staggering 16 million lives in one of the deadliest wars in human history. What follows the legend of that 1910 car was so irritably tainted by the events that the owner after owner that followed met a violent fate. Trouble is, it's difficult to prove any of this a century later when record keeping wasn't rigorous as of today. That car over the 12 years had 15 different owners. And during that period, the car was involved in accidents that claimed the lives of 13 people. One owner, an Austrian general, became insane and died in an asylum. Another, after owning the car for just 9 days, collided with two peasants and a tree after a valiant attempt to avoid the crash. another owner committed suicide, and that's just the beginning. When this one car, the governor of Yugoslavia, suffered four separate accidents, one of which cost him an arm. He sold the car to a friend who bought the cursed car on a dare. The friend flipped the car over and crushed in an accident. A Swiss racing driver exactly met the same fate. The last owner of the car was Tibor Herzfeld, a Romanian garage owner who drove the car to a wedding with five friends. The vehicle suddenly spun out of control and crashed and killed all but one on board. There's even something a little bit creepier about that. For the better part of the century, the car has been on display at the Vienna's, oh boy, Herges, I'm not even going to try that, guys. Thank you.
That one is bad. I wouldn't try that one either.
I'll spell it for you guys. I know German. This isn't German, but I'll spell it for you. Herregescitlices. I know it's leeches. I don't know.
Good luck to the spelling bee with that word.
Yeah, thanks, guys. In the 2000s, a British visitor named Brian Pressland noted a detail in a license plate which reads AII118. According to Mike Dash, a writer for the blog at the Charles Fort Institute, the world's leading resource for scholarship and research understanding strange experiences and anomalous phenomena, the license plate could be interpreted for A, for Armistice, 11-11-18, which means that the death car has always carried with the prediction, not of the dreadful day that happened with the Arch Ferdinand, but mark the beginning of the First World War, but November 11th, 1918, Armistice Day, the day that the war ended. Definitely spooky.
Interesting.
James, what's your take?
Yeah. Well, for those of your viewers who don't know, over in Europe, when a vehicle is built, it gets a license plate. That license plate stays with the vehicle for the life of it. So unlike here, where we can get, you know, we get a new plate and we get a new car, or we transfer the same plate to a new car, the plate stays with the car for the life of it. So that fact is really interesting. The stalling, you could say, well, you know, back in those days, like you said, hand crank, low voltage, and they would use magnetos. Magnetos were very, very good right up until they weren't. So the car stalling out and the unfortunate events happening, but the rest that surrounded that car, that is a lot of, well, that's just bad luck. That is a lot of bad luck.
Absolutely. That's scary business. And the fact that they were able to, you know, maybe the license plate thing was a coincidence, but boy, that's some scary business.
Okay.
And
I have a question.
Yes, Pam.
All right, here. So, like, back then, probably not, but nowadays, I think, Bob, we had a discussion maybe a few months back, if you're looking to buy a home, whether or not the realtor tells you if it's haunted or not. How about for a car? Like, this was passed down, but, like, nowadays, if you want to buy a car, a used car, do they have to tell you if it's haunted?
No, I don't think so.
I would imagine it would go with the same as with a house. So our poor children of the night listeners are just going to, everything they go and buy, hey, is this hot dog haunted?
Well, like I think I asked somebody, a couple of realtors about the house. Some said no, you don't have to tell them it's a haunted house. And then one other said, yeah, you got to tell them it's haunted. So.
In some states, you have to tell them if there was, like, a murder that happened, but they don't have, for the most part, I don't believe they have to disclose.
Ah, that's just the best lottery. You walk in and you're trying to feel out for the scariest one out of the bunch.
Hey, I bought a haunted house.
Listen, when I get mine, it'll definitely be haunted, but you get the point.
Well, yes. That's not the Carfax, if it's haunted or not.
I don't think the Carfax shows you a demonic possession there, Count.
Nah,
I don't think you're looking at it and says, oh, exorcism in 2015? What was that for? And then the car dealer's like, oh, you know, it's okay. We got that there fixed.
Carfax, if you want to sponsor us, we can help you get that service.
Oh, he's going. He's even got the sponsors. Carfax, sponsor us.
There you go.
I don't know anything Carfax about cars, but we'll do it.
We'll call it the Haunted Report.
The Haunted Report. Is your car haunted? Give us a call. I'll tell you.
If it doesn't come up on the Carfax, your exorcism's free.
Huh.
Not bad. That's good. Deal.
All right, James, you got one more for us, right?
No, I believe that was three for me.
I have one more for you guys.
Oh, good.
All right. I'm not going to go into the full story, and I'm going to have to plug my favorite podcast, Ghostly Podcast, again on this one. They did a Bonnie and Clyde episode a while back, and it is by far one of their best episodes they've ever done. Rebecca reads, like, Bonnie's, like, poem, and oh my god, it's incredible. If you guys get a moment and you're just into history and you like true crime, I recommend
it. Take it back. I did have another one. Sorry.
Oh, did you? Oh, too late now. You could finish. So anyway, if you guys get a chance, the Pat and Rebecca's Ghostly episode on Bonnie and Clyde, it's fantastic. All right. In a nutshell, I'm not as into true crime as other people are. So we talk about this a lot where there's, you know, you have your true crime podcast and you have your paranormal podcast. We bowl on the same bowling league, but we don't necessarily hang out together. We cross a very thin parallel line from time to time, but we don't necessarily end up doing, you know, the same stuff. But my favorite true crime story of all time, we have a caller. We're going to take the caller. I'll get back to my
show. You know, it's not Jack. It's Bobby on the line here, guys.
Hey, Bobby, where are you calling from?
Pekin, Illinois.
Oh, what's on your mind tonight, Bobby?
It was actually about the Lincoln train car. I remember you said something about him not being embalmed. He was actually embalmed at every stop.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln was, because I'm big into that, he was embalmed at each stop.
But he wasn't.
According to what I read, the two funeral people who were on staff were constantly trying to refresh, and they were failing the battle because unrefrigerated car, no such thing as ice, and it was a 13-day trek.
It wasn't a proper embalming, though.
No, he turned almost copper-like, and that's what, as James said, that they constantly had to put stuff on his face to make him look.
Right, but it wasn't. They were doing things on site. It wasn't like a proper embalming. Rigor mortis is still going to kick in.
Well, even with a proper embalming, decay still starts. Still happens.
Yeah, they were started seeing actually the bruising too was starting to come up too, even because I remember researching about that they did have to do the embalming and that freshening up every time, but it wasn't like the best embalming situation.
No, they were doing it on site. I get what you're saying.
But yeah, that was the only thing. I just wanted the update on that part because I remember hearing when you were talking about that, I was like, I thought he was embalmed each time.
I apologize. It was not. He didn't have like a full blown like going into it like funeral home. We're doing the proper thing. They just had to touch him up. It was like Weekend at Bernie's. They had to make him look good at every stop.
Weekend at Lincoln? Yeah. I'd watch it.
Well, thanks for calling in, Bobby. Do you have a scary haunted car story of your own?
Well, my dad's... my mom and dad's car was an 84 Chrysler E-Class. And after my dad passed away, something funny happened where there was a leak in the washing fluid and fluid reservoir, and with those cars they had that computer where it would actually say constantly your washer fluid is low or your door is ajar. Which it was annoying to my dad. Well, he eventually unplugged it. I mean, completely, there was no way of any connection, so it would quit doing that forever. Well, after my dad passed in 91, a little bit later on, all of a sudden we were just driving down the road and that came back on. Your washer fluid is low.
Oh, wow.
Huh. Yeah. Just completely out of the blue. It was a nice day out and everything. It just came on once more because my dad was a practical joker. So I think that was kind of him just coming along and just saying, hey, you know, because he worked on the cars all the time, so his energy, blood, sweat, tears would be in the car, so.
Huh. Well, thanks for sharing that, Bobby. I appreciate when a car guy can call in and tell us about spooky cars and then teach me something, because I know nothing.
Yeah, I know a lot about cars, too, so.
Well, thank you for calling in, Bobby. We appreciate it.
All right. Y'all have a good evening.
You too. Sorry, folks. When I say things, I mean it. Yes, he did have an embalming, but it wasn't like a full-blown, like, we're going to embalm him here in straight-up, like, you know, process. It was a quick thing. Those people were there to help freshen up the body. It wasn't like we're embalming him and we're done. We had to keep him going for a while during that train ride.
Keep him looking fresh.
Thanks for chiming in. We appreciate it.
Plus, things like embalming was still in its infancy in the 1860s, so
yes.
What good could they really have done?
Yes. Yeah. And then someone chimed in, it was Darday, says, rigor sets in well before the embalming takes place. The embalming is to relieve the effects of rigor mortis. Well, thank you, everybody. We're learning so much about the embalming arts today.
This is a very, very...
All right, moving on. So one of my favorite true crime stories of all time, probably my absolute favorite true crime story, is the story of Bonnie and Clyde. And probably because of, I don't know, it's just a fascinating story. I really like their, you know, the dynamic they had. And it was, you know, they had like the, you know, there's books and they had like this whole story. I just really, really enjoy that story. It's fascinating to me and it blows my mind. And I just really appreciate it. But my, you know, one of my favorite bits is the movie itself with Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. The movie's incredible, but I digress. So again, if you guys want to hear the full story about Bonnie and Clyde and the ghostly encounters of them, check out the Ghostly Podcast episode about it. But if you guys saw the Bonnie and Clyde film, you know what happens at the end. Spoiler alert. They were caught up by the highwaymen, and they were shot and killed right by their car. Tons of bullets ripped right through them. It was a pretty devastating sight. Now, that might be where the story ends. Now, there are plenty of sightings of Bonnie and Clyde in the woods surrounding where they died, in different places. There's different stories about where the ghost might be. But we don't have any stories, really, about the car. We do. So, the F8 Ford, the death car as it's known, has been a popular attraction at, like, carnivals and amusement parks and different state fairs, where it eventually ended up at a displayed room with Clyde Barrow's bloodstained bullet-holed shirt at Whiskey Pete's Casino in Prim, Nevada, just across the border from California. And the eerie thing about this car is when you look at it, it still has all the bullet holes. It's still pretty racked up. Story goes that when you take a picture by the car, you can sometimes get figures of what could be Bonnie and Clyde in period piece clothing that are hanging out around the car. There was even one story about the car actually oozing blood that they couldn't clean up. And it just kept happening over and over again. I couldn't find a video of it, but that was just one story. It makes sense that something like that could be hanging around the car. You know, a tragic death like that's going to leave a big energy footprint behind. So it definitely would make sense that the Bonnie and Clyde car might actually indeed be haunted. James in panic.
It definitely could be. There's been a lot of cases of tragic deaths happening around vehicles of different types. They say the Titanic Museum in Branson, Missouri is very, very haunted because of all the artifacts they have there. Having a shirt somebody died in, was shot to death in, yeah, that, especially still having his blood on it, that could almost be like blood magic, really.
Absolutely. All right, James, you got one more story for actually panic. What's your take on the Bonnie and Clyde car?
I believe it, Bob. I mean, I wasn't there to witness the real thing, but I did see the movie. For something like that traumatic of a event, it wouldn't surprise me that the
fun fact. I actually saw that movie with you in college.
That's true. You're right.
We did. We saw that movie together in college. But that movie, I love that movie. It's always been
a my favorite movie, Bob. Before we move on to the last thing here,
what does it have to do with Bonnie and Clyde?
No, but I'll tell you what it is. That's to do with college. It's Citizen Kane, but with the Roger Ebert commentary.
All right, James. What's our last story?
Well, this one ends on it's a sad note, but it's also kind of a good note because it has been a kind of a heavy episode. So I'm sure you've heard of psychics and ghosts helping to solve their own murders, right?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a ghost helping to solve his own accident and disappearance?
No, I have not. I hope you fill us in.
I certainly can. So there's quite a bit of details on this story, and it was on quite a few different websites, including BBC, if I remember right. So on December 11th, 2002... at roughly 7:20 p.m., drivers on the A3 motorway in Surrey began to call in about an accident involving a car that had swerved off the road with its headlights blazing and went into the underbrush down the embankment off the side of the highway at Barfham near Guildford. Now, apparently, it's got kind of a hairpin turn there, so accidents are fairly frequent in that spot. Police arrived and they immediately started searching the area for the car and the driver, but they found no crashed car, no wreckage, no debris. The underbrush was high and thick. There were no tracks. It didn't look disturbed at all. Undeterred, for whatever reason, the police decided to, widen the search or look harder. And then a discovery was made. A maroon Vauxhall Astra, which is like a little four-door car, just kind of bigger than a Focus, but around in that neighborhood. It was there deep in the brush, nose down. The windshield was cracked up spider web. The driver's door smashed in, and not far from the car itself was the skeleton of the driver. They started doing some analysis, of course, and they found that this car had not crashed in December, but it had actually crashed about 5 months prior, maybe a little more, back in July. The driver was a 21-year-old male, Mr. Christopher Chandler. Mr. Chandler was last seen alive in Hounslow of West London, drinking with friends. No one had known that he had driven off towards Surrey, and his brother had, in fact, reported him missing. But the police had no idea where to look. His car and body were found after a motorist reported seeing a car with blazing headlights crash into the underbrush at the exact spot where his car was found and where his body was found. Police speculate that he had suffered severe injuries and had crawled out of the passenger side of the car and sadly passing away in his attempt to climb up the steep embankment to get help. His cell phone records show a final call to his brother lasting for less than a second, probably not even long enough to connect. They don't know if the call was made before or after his passing, but motorists reporting seeing this phantom car crashing led to him being found and being able to give closure to his family and be laid to rest proper.
Huh. Well, that's eerie.
Yeah, that's a very interesting one, especially people, multiple motorists reported seeing this and seeing the car go down the embankment, and yet there was no fresh evidence of a crash.
Huh. Panic, what's your take on that?
That is very eerie, but, as James said, it's a very very heavy episode with these car stories, and that's, I think, a solid one to end on there. But some of these things, you could chalk up the bad mechanics guys, and some you just got to be, hey, maybe this car is cursed and haunted. Simple as that.
No,
I'm guilty mechanic of doing some shady repairs myself, I'll admit it.
Well, a mechanic, if you take the haunted car to mechanic, I mean, can they tell you, hey, you know what? I found nothing mechanically wrong with your car, but I think it's haunted.
Sounds like doctors in the 1800s. We think you got a flu bug. It might be caused by demons. Here's some cocaine and heroin.
You know, you think it might be arthritis in your knee, but we think it's inhabited by the spirit of a 13th century tyrant.
Yeah. Here's some cocaine.
Will you pay him for that advice too? I don't know.
So maybe, I don't know. Now, I'm no car guy. I'll be completely honest with you guys. I once fixed a lawnmower with James's help. But that's about the most extentful thing I can do. And I could change a tire. However, I'm not a gearhead. I'm not a car guy. I did this episode because I thought the story about the serial killer with the hearse was interesting. So we did a haunted car episode.
Nice.
Yeah, I was sad. I tried researching that one. I saw it was just like a Twitter post about the serial killer Pee Wee Gaskins. And supposedly somebody knows somebody. It's one of those stories that is restoring the hearse. It's like a 1960s model, and it's supposedly haunted. And that kind of got me interested in the whole haunted car thing. But unfortunately, I couldn't find any more about the car other than the serial killer who owned it.
Well, excellent. Now, James, we're... James, we're just about out of time. Where can people find out more about you if they're interested in talking to you? I know you run the like a witchier kind of page, and you run the Children of the Night page, and your cosplay thing. So talk about all of it. Plug your stuff.
Alrighty. Where to begin? Well, as you said, I run the Children of the Night fan page, or fan group, I should say. It's where we, you know, share articles and talk about the paranormal, and we also do share like cryptid memes and stuff in there. It's pretty
funny. My favorite part of Children of the Night is when you guys post memes. Please keep me
updated. Especially when they're about the Mothman, Bob Anderson.
I am not the Mothman, but go on.
But I run a page called The Dragon's Inn. That's where I kind of try and give witchcraft advice, and I share different things from different pages that I follow. Kind of like a big interconnected community. I share spells and stuff on there, and I also share some of the happenings at the inn, which is my home, such as Halloween decorations and happenings, and even some of the food I cook.
Wow. So it's like James's personal blog about witchcraft on Facebook. So you can find that on the Dragon's Inn.
For the cosplay as a Ghostbuster, you can find me the Buster Biker and Ecto B. I ride an Ecto motorcycle to help raise money for sick kids.
And that's what's important most. James, we really appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Panic, you got something prolific to say? Oh, hold on. No. James is on the show, so I got to make him say something prolific. James, say something prolific.
Be excellent to each other.
I feel like someone did that one already. That might have been Craig and Abby when we had them on. So try again.
Darn it. Well, something prolific.
You could just say something prolific, and then that could be your thing.
No, that'd be the easy way out.
You want me to get back to you?
No, I got it.
Okay, let's hear it.
Times are hard, and you don't know what other people may be going through. So in this world, you can be anything you want. Just be kind.
That's good. Very good. We appreciate that. Good job, James. Panic, thank what you got to say? Any Thanksgiving wishes for everybody? Or
One, may your gas tank be forever full. That's a sign they're keeping up with your car there. Also, yes, happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody watching at home. We are thankful. Bob, I think I speak for you on this. All the viewers and listeners out there.
Absolutely. Folks, I just want to wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving and a happy Thanksgiving. Folks, on behalf of me and the entire Bob After Dark team, I just want to say I know for a fact I am thankful for all of you, my Children of the Night, that tune in week to week. It brings a smile to my face knowing we're getting closer and closer to goals, making this full-time work, and, you know, someday Panic won't have to, you know, Panic can sleep on, you know, a nice couch that I give him. But I say that out of complete love because Panic has slept on my couch before. I'm gonna get Panic a new couch to sleep
on.
Lots
of cats will roam around.
Folks, thank you so much for supporting the show, and just know that I'm extremely thankful for you guys. I hope you're having a safe holiday, and I hope you guys are enjoying my favorite food of the Thanksgiving holiday, which that's how we're gonna wrap this up. Real quick, James, your favorite Thanksgiving food?
Turkey. It's always the turkey.
Bannock.
The pumpkin pie. It's the best. Whipped cream.
Cranberry sauce.
Cranberries.
Cranberries. Ooh, yeah. Cranberry, not the sauce, but the jellied canned cranberry.
You got to have it in the can, Bob.
That's my absolute favorite. Ocean Spray.
Yes.
Sponsor us.
It's got to look like the can.
Yes. All right, folks.
Butterball turkeys. Sponsor us.
I'm a vegetarian, but Butterball, you could sponsor the show.
Sure.
All right, folks. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Memoriam Development.